This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Now, as the Strangler has reminded us, Trotsky got an ice pick, an unusual weapon to choose for a political assassination. But there was far more to it than that. It was the result of an intelligence operation lasting years, disputes about the future of Russian communism, greed for power and personal animus. Stalin really hated Trotsky. Josh Ireland is the author of The Death of Trotsky, the true story of the plot to kill Stalin's greatest enemy. Josh, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon. I'm delighted to be on.
Stalin had ejected Trotsky from the country, why wasn't that it? It was just all over then. Why bother following him around?
Well, I think the weird thing about Trotsky is he's an incredibly efficient way into Stalin's mind, in so much as that Stalin's maybe one of the most paranoid, irrational, strange, bloodthirsty figures of the 20th century. But at the same time, he was sort of cold, cunning, and Machiavellian. And Trotsky sort of marks the place where those two sides of his character meet. So although, on the one hand, the sort of rational part of Stalin's brain knew that he'd sort of defeated Trotsky completely, he'd put all of his friends and family in prison, he'd defeated all of his followers, and sent him out of the country. There was another part of his mind that thought, maybe in some way this person will bring me down. And I don't think he could ever quite rid himself of that sort of paranoid impulse.
Mm. Was there any evidence that Trotsky might have been able to do that?
Well, yes and no. I mean, no in that, you know, Trotsky's this sort of incredibly diminished figure by the time he's been exiled from Russia. You know, he has almost no money, no followers. There's almost no country in the whole of Europe that's willing to sort of to put up with him. So on that sort of register, it would look as if he posed absolutely no threat. But on the other hand, that had been the position of the Bolsheviks in 1916, 1917, just before the Russian Revolution. You know, there was this tiny scattered group of revolutionaries. There was no sign that they would, within a matter of months, be in charge of this sort of huge empire of millions of people. So I think at the back of his mind, he always knew that things can collapse, you know, that things, structures that look impregnable can have, you know, this sort of secret rotting weakness in the middle of them. And I think maybe he thought Trotsky might be the person that could find that weakness.
Mm. Is it reading too much into it to perhaps speculate that Stalin looked at Trotsky and he looked at this suave, kind of worldly figure, and to a degree, Trotsky was everything he wasn't, and
yeah,
kind of made him feel a bit inferior.
I think you know, it's kind of difficult because on the one, it's this sort of bifurcated nature of Stalin's personality, that he's got incredible amounts of power. You know, he's come from the humblest of backgrounds to be maybe one of the most powerful men in the world, certainly the most powerful man in his country. You know, he's forcing everybody that's ever sort of criticized him or been skeptical about him to kind of go publicly praise him, and, you know, to really abase themselves. It kind of in the way that, you know, Donald Trump does to sort of former members of the Republican establishment. But at the same time, yeah, he's got this nagging sense that he's not, you know, he can't do the things that Trotsky could do so easily. You know, he wasn't as eloquent. He couldn't write like Trotsky. He was this sort of much more saturnine, you know, he didn't have the same charisma. He couldn't command a room in the same way, except by the sort of projection of power. So, yeah, I think it was an insecurity, yeah.
Yeah. So when Trotsky was exiled from the Soviet Union, how many countries was he in before he ended up in Mexico?
So he started off in a small island in Turkey, just off Istanbul. Then he was briefly in France, then Norway, and then, yeah, finally Mexico. So, yeah, three countries, then Mexico.
Yeah, and did those three previous countries, were they not keen to have his presence there?
I don't think anyone was. I think, that again, that's a sort of paradox of him, and that precisely the moment when he's weakest, you know, he's fleeing for his life, effectively. Still, people remember him as the figure he'd been during the Bolshevik figure he'd been during the revolution, you know, that he, along with Lenin, was sort of bogeyman for the whole of Western Europe, you know, these figures that they felt whose hands were dipped in blood and were so desperate to export revolution to the whole of the world. And I don't think the Western leaders ever really updated their sense of him. So I think there was a sense that if you sort of let Trotsky come to your country, it's like sort of importing a virus, you know, that's going to suddenly bring everything down. So yeah, no country wanted him. Beyond Mexico, eventually.
Yeah, and why did Mexico decide to keep him, so to speak, and give him safe harbour?
Well, I think they had a more sympathetic government. So they had a sort of reforming socialist government led by President Cardenas. And then also there was pressure from sort of some of Trotsky's sympathisers, notably Diego Rivera, the great muralist who was also married to Frida Kahlo. And so they helped petition the government to allow Trotsky to arrive. And then when Trotsky did come to Mexico, they put he stayed at Frida Kahlo's house.
Mm. Now, and given the hospitality that Diego Rivera showed him, perhaps maybe it was unwise for Trotsky then to have an affair with Frida Kahlo.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredibly rude.
Yes, not the actual great house guest.
But also unwise on the level that I think Rivera was sort of was very very keen to let it be known that if he ever found anyone had slept with his wife, he'd shoot him. Hmm. So I think he was on every level sort of taking a risk. But I think it sort of speaks to how the kind of the weird conditions of being in exile, you know, that you're powerless. You've got almost nothing left to do. So why not start an affair with this beautiful, seductive woman who seems, you know, incredibly interested in you? So, yeah, it didn't last long. But I think it caused a lot of trouble while it lasted.
But yeah, one would imagine.
An amazing matchup of two figures from the 20th century.
This podcast is brought to you by Avocado Mattress. And if healthy, comfortable sleep matters to you, this is one organic brand worth knowing. That's because what you sleep on actually matters.
Most mattresses rely on synthetic foams and chemical materials that trap heat, break down over time, or off-gas. Avocado does it differently. Their mattresses are handcrafted with natural materials, organic latex, organic wool, and organic cotton, designed to be naturally cooling, incredibly supportive, and long-lasting. They're certified organic by GOTS and meet multiple non-toxic and safety certifications. Made for people who care about their health and the environment without sacrificing comfort. I love that Avocado proves you don't have to choose between comfortable, supportive sleep and your values. And now you can get up to 15% off all Avocado mattresses. Just go to avocadogreenmattress.com. Get up to 15% off at avocadogreenmattress.com. Avocadogreenmattress.com.
Had there been many previous attempts on his life? Did he have to be cautious?
Yeah, I mean, he effectively was hunted from the moment he left Russia. I think there's a sense that Stalin regretted letting him leave in the first place. And then I think for the next, you know, from 1929 right up to 1940, when the assassination actually took place, there were various attempts to get close to him. You know, his entourage was penetrated entirely by the Russian spies. You know, there wasn't a single letter he wrote or received that hadn't already been read by the NKVD, who were the forerunners of the KGB. And I think there were always attempts to get close to him to try and find a way of murdering him. But I think he was fairly careless of his own safety, but the people around him were desperately attempting to make sure that he was protected as much as they could. But the sort of most significant attempt before August 1940 was a sort of, again, was an assault on the compound where Trotsky lived, which was led by another Mexican painter called David Siqueiros, where they stormed the compound, fired 200 bullets, but somehow missed Trotsky and every other person in the house.
My word. So tell us about Ramon Mercader. Who was he?
Well, he's kind of amazing. So, I mean, one of the reasons I was most interested in the writing this story is that, you know, I think that the assassination of Trotsky is one of the most famous of the last, you know, 150 years. And when you think about other assassinations, you sort of know, you know who's behind it. You know that JFK was murdered by Lee Harvey Oswald. But I realized that I knew nothing about Ramon Mercader. I didn't know if he was a sort of colorless functionary or a mercenary or anything. But actually, I think he's a really interesting example of sort of what the 20th century did to a lot of people. You know, he was from a very different background to a lot of the Russian revolutionaries, in that he was from a prosperous bourgeois background, but his family lost all their money. And then in a kind of weird twist of events, his mother became involved in revolutionary politics, also developed a heroin addiction. The family sort of fell apart, and out of the ashes, or out of the sort of the broken parts of this family, that there was, you know, she started working for the Russian special and secret services, and eventually recruited Ramon, who is this sort of, I mean, if you were going to draw up a list of the qualities you want in a spy, he had them all. You know, he was handsome, he was strong, he was charismatic, he was a good storyteller, he was a good liar, you know, he was a great shot, an athlete, but also, you know, driven by this sort of burning passion for world communism. You know, he was an ideologue as much as anyone else in the story. You know, that's what drove him.
Yeah, and it was it for him to ingratiate himself into Trotsky's circle, that took some time.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Russian, the NKVD sort of operated in the way that a lot of Russian spy agencies have in the last 50, 60 years, and that they find people that they think are useful, but they don't necessarily know what they're going to do with them. But Ramon was recruited, and then eventually they found what they wanted him to do, which was to seduce a sort of naive, fairly insignificant woman called Sylvia Agaloff, who was on the fringes of the Trotskyist movement. And again, the plan wasn't then for Ramon to carry out the assassination. It was just to act as a spy, really, to be another person who could gather intelligence from within Trotsky's entourage. It's a long, and then he was an incredibly skillful, the way he penetrated Trotsky's entourage first in Paris and then later in Mexico City, he's incredibly careful and incredibly skillful about the way he did it.
Yeah. And so was it at some point then did his Russian handlers decide, oh, you're close enough now to actually kill him?
Well, it was after that. So again, even when he was in Mexico City, even when he finally had earned the trust of both Trotsky and his guards, you know, and was entrusted with doing sort of shopping expeditions for Trotsky's wife and taking Trotsky's grandson to on days out. Even then, they hadn't decided that's what they wanted him to do. It was only after the failure of the assault in May 1940, where all these bullets were fired without hitting him, that the Russian spies realized that they had to find a different way of taking Trotsky out, something more subtle, something more cunning.
Yeah, an ice pick is subtle. but was that deliberate? Was it very much sending a message as well as killing Trotsky?
I think so. I think it was one that they wanted to give him at least a chance of walking out without anyone noticing what he'd done. But the other was that I think there was, in their eyes, it was a very visceral symbol of what standing up to Stalin meant. You know, that this is what opposition to Stalin would lead to, that, you know, a bloodied, sort of a gory death. You know, that you could have used a knife, you could have used a pistol, but, you know, this the horrible, almost that medieval way of finishing someone off.
Yeah, and did Ramon walk out of there? Did he get away with it?
He didn't, no. So the sort of tragedy for him was that he, just as he was about to just as he was standing over Trotsky with his ice axe, Trotsky's head moved just an infinitesimal amount, which meant that although when the blow struck, it wounded him terribly enough to kill him the following day, it didn't kill him instantly. So he fought back. There was a sort of struggle, and then Trotsky's guards were alerted by this apparently terrifying scream that Trotsky let out, and they rushed down to try and find out what happened. So they beat Ramon to a bloody pulp, where he was then arrested and then spent 20 years in prison, you know, steadfastly pretending that he had nothing to do with the NKVD. It was just a sort of disaffected former follower of Trotsky, which is, again, like a story that feels really familiar to anyone sort of watching what.
Yeah, indeed. Look out for the movie version of that. Josh, thank you so much for speaking with us today. That was Josh Ireland there, author of The Death of Trotsky, the true story of the plot to kill Stalin's greatest enemy.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.